All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio on Free CR. And for our first guest of the program, we're very happy to have Sibylla on our program. Sibylla is a socialist activist. In fact, she was actually she's actually been a guest for the beginning of the Green Left radio program when we just first started. But she's just been based in Germany for the past several years until returning back to Australia this year, and has also been previously active with Die Linke, the left party in Germany. And just recently, German had elections over the last kind of weekend, and so we have Sibylla on to have a bit of discussion about that. So good morning, Sibylla.
To you and your listeners.
Okay, so I guess the first kind of question Sibylla, is essentially, from my understanding, with the kind of election results, is that it was a bit of a shock kind of result for the ruling party, the CDU, who essentially lost to the Social Democratic Party of Germany, who have claimed victory over the CDU. Although that said, the SPD doesn't necessarily have a majority. And I guess, what can you tell us about the kind of reasons for this kind of upset, and I guess about, and especially in the context of the general results of the election?
Start by painting a little bit of a picture of the result first. So it is true that the Social Democratic Party, the SPD, has had the largest amount of votes. However, this is marginal. We're talking about 25.7% of the votes, as opposed to 24.1%. So we're really talking about 1.6% ahead of the CDU, Angela Merkel's old party. So yes, the SPD, the Social Democratic Party, is the largest party now in Germany after this election. However, it is marginal. So let's just put that out there first, so that people can get a little bit of a sense that this is not like a huge victory for the Social Democratic Party. The big winners in this election have been the Greens, without a doubt. They got an increase from the previous election, which was in 2017, by 6.4%. This is like, it was to be expected in to some degree, but that's certainly a huge increase. They are now sitting at 14.8%, which makes them the third largest party in Germany. So that's just to give a little bit of a picture in terms of the winners, so to speak. However, what has to be taken into account as well is the enormous, massive loss of the CDU, of Merkel's Conservative Party. And that loss has been at minus 8.8%. That's unheard of, and was the worst election result for the Conservative Party since 1949. So that just gives people a little bit of a picture, I think. Losers also in this election was the left, Die Linke, you just mentioned, the socialist left in Germany. And they had a loss of minus 4.3%, which was very significant. I'll talk about that a little bit later again. And also the far-right party, who had been increasing their votes dramatically over the last 6 years, in particular in state parliament, but federally they also had a loss of minus 2.3%. I'll talk about that a little bit later as well.
Yeah.
When it comes to why this is the case, one has to really say this is because of personality and not politics. Voters essentially had to make a decision between three candidates for the chancellor position, and the largest party coalition determines the chancellor. And the three options on the table, a candidate for the Social Democratic Party, Olaf Scholz, he was an experienced politician who had been in parliament for decades, and I guess instilled some level of certainty and trust in people. Whereas the candidate, once Merkel had decided last year that she wasn't going to re-stand in the election, the CDU was riddled with a lot of soul searching, who should be the next candidate, and there was a lot of back and forth going on. The person who ended up being the candidate, Armin Laschet, he was, as recently as in July, there was a big social media disaster when there was big flooding happening in Germany, and he was seen laughing at in the middle of the flooding, and that just went haywire on the social media, and basically he lost enormous amount of respect at that point. And the Greens, in fact, had the candidate there was a woman, Annalena Baerbock, and she also had a bit of a July social media disaster when she published a book and was accused of plagiarism. So this is just a little bit of an first impression.
And I guess, I mean, despite the fact that you've kind of, you've also said that a lot of this kind of electoral kind of result can be explained by, you know, certain sort of personality politics, a certain level of kind of personality politics and nothing to do necessarily with kind of political issues. But I guess obviously with every kind of election, there is always sort of politics certainly kind of operating, I guess, in the background. And I guess what can you tell us about some of the political issues in Germany that have in some sense, underpinned the kind of lead up to the election?
Yeah, I'm not saying that politics wasn't an issue. Absolutely, politics are an issue. But I think for many voters, especially voters who are not necessarily set in their views, let's put it that way, and what we maybe would call the marginal voters, but I don't think that's necessarily the correct term in this context. The key political issues were the SPD that the SPD put forward, and that was very clever. And that was basically, you know, pretending, let's put it that way, that they're more left than what they were. But they put forward an increase of the minimum wage. The minimum wage in Germany is currently €9.50. And that was only introduced a few years ago. That's it's not a long-standing concept as we've had in Australia. And the demand was for that to be increased to €12, so quite a significant increase. Now, just to illustrate, Die Linke had a position to increase the minimum wage to €13. So if you're a voter and you're on the left of politics, centre-left, whatever, and you think, okay, well, the Social Democrats are calling for €12. Yeah, Die Linke, 13 is better, but 12 is pretty close to 13. So if you really want to get rid of the Conservative government, why would you vote for Die Linke for 13 if 12 sounds really good? So that's just, that was one, clear political demand. And another political demand that the Social Democrats called for that was very appealing to people was to change the way the health insurance system is run. In Germany, there's compulsory health insurance, and in fact, people pay a lot of their paycheck into the health insurance. Now, if you are earning above a certain amount, you can opt to be privately insured. The thing what has been happening, though, is that the privately insured people can also access the public system. So the public system has been paying for quite well-off people and their health insurance. And, of course, in the COVID pandemic, that has come to the fore even more. So the background here is a growing disparity between rich and poor in Germany. And the irony, of course, is that this growing gap was really fostered by social democratic politics that were introduced almost 20 years ago when the SPD government, in coalition with the Greens, introduced enormous neoliberal policy attacks on working conditions, on the unemployed and the welfare system. So unfortunately, for voters, that wasn't at the forefront of their memory, that really, yes, the Social Democrats were putting forward these left-leaning policy changes now, but that really the state of the conditions people are living in was largely influenced by Social Democratic politics from years ago in the first place. Mm. And let me just make a few comments on the CDU. The CDU didn't really have much to offer, especially on social security matters and also on old age pensions, poverty, again, like a hugely growing area in Germany. And the CDU has, I mean, Merkel was in the chancellor for 16 years, so we've seen the financial crisis during that time, the so-called refugee crisis in 15-16, and of course the corona crisis, and people were really ready for change.
And I guess into the kind of one of the other aspects that we're kind of interested in talking to you about. And in fact, we've actually previously had discussions with you about this in previous programs, like a number of kind of years ago. But I guess one sort of aspect about German politics has been the kind of threat of the far right in the form of the AfD. And of course, some things that I've kind of observed, although I haven't necessarily read that deeply into it, has been, of course, I have kind of noticed that there has been a bit of a kind of anti-lockdown / anti sort of vaxxer sort of movement in response to the kind of COVID-19 pandemic response. And I kind of presume, similar to kind of Australia right now, that has a lot of kind of links with the sort of far right kind of forces within Germany. And I guess, what can you tell us about how some of this kind of influenced the kind of backdrop to the election?
AfD, which stands for the Alternative for Germany, came into federal government the first time in 2017. So it's a reasonably young party for those who are not so familiar with the layout, but have grown enormously over the last 16 years. And they, 2017, they came into parliament on the backdrop of the so-called refugee crisis. So utterly utterly racist policies, basic positioning of people against each other. Now, the AfD grew strongly in state governments and in local areas, and in particular in the eastern part of Germany. And I won't go into detail now because this will be beyond this discussion, but the eastern parts of Germany have been the poor cousins. And there's no doubt about that ever since reunion, and there's enormous structural issues here. So given this, the AfD has lost in the elections. They lost minus 2.3%. And they've lost in 13 out of 16 states. So that's quite remarkable. However, they are still the largest party in one of the eastern states in Germany. So let's not forget about that as well. Yes, they have lost, but for them to be the largest party is extremely frightening. That state is Thuringia, and ironically, this state had a Die Linke, state prime minister for the last few years. So again, lots to think about what has been happening in this state. Nonetheless, they are still way too strong. There's no question about that. But the whole issue of the anti-lockdown movement, this movement has an interesting name in Germany, which is hard to translate into English, but I would like to call it a bit like the Maverick movement or so. And when they took off, it was really a hodgepodge of hippie-style anti-vaxxers, conspiracy theorists, people generally concerned about restrictions of constitutional liberties, and the far right. And the far right really saw an opportunity here very early to jump onto this and use this as an opportunity to exploit sentiment. Now, the AfD was actually quite late to come to the party, and they were a little bit disoriented when Corona hit and had quite little media presence and little to say. It was really quite late that they sort of got more involved in the whole anti-lockdown movement. But I know it's hard for some listeners in Australia to sort of imagine, but really, the whole anti-lockdown movement lost its momentum since June this year when things opened up again in Germany. So I would actually say that for this election, there was not much influence because we're just at a different state in the pandemic in Germany.
All right, well, thanks for that. And I guess now we're going into, guess, the kind of next kind of aspect that that we'll get to talk about a bit more. But I guess you sort of mentioned before, but I guess when it comes to the left, the main kind of left kind of force is Die Linke, which you've been previously been active of and a member of within Germany. And I guess they have had their kind of worst result ever kind of electorally compared to kind of previous runs. And I guess what is sort of your analysis about their decline and what is sort of the implications it has for the left in general within Germany?
Look, it actually wasn't their worst ever. The Linke came to federal parliament the first time in 1998, so not long after reunification in the 90s. And they were kicked out again in 2002. So, and ever since then, they were back in the federal parliament. Now, in Germany, for those who don't know, you have to have 5% to be able to get a seat in parliament, or there's a second way of getting in, and that is if you win, if three of your candidates are elected directly, as in they got a majority vote in their electoral district. So in this election, in fact, Die Linke, I mean, these are the preliminary results, only got 4.9%. So in theory, they could have been kicked out. However, they were rescued this time around because they had three of their members directly voted by the populace. So, look, Die Linke is not a homogenous party. And from a left terminology perspective, the reformist social democratic part of the party is in the majority, and Die Linke has made enormous strategic mistakes, not only in the lead up to this election, but on numerous fronts. There's no question about that. With regard to this election, they were so confident that there was going to be a red-green-red federal government opportunity that they really couldn't see beyond it. So the main message that they took into this election was we will govern, we will support a social democratic and Greens government. And because they ran this message, they stopped being critical. They stopped being critical of the SPD. And they stopped being critical of the Greens, even though Die Linke's position on some of the key issues when it comes to social security, when it comes to climate change and environment, when it comes to working conditions, Die Linke clearly had enormously better positions. But they held back with promoting them, or they held back with being critical of the SPD and Greens, in order to not alienate them and pursue this vision of being in federal government. Now, that position, that strategic approach to the election enormously weakened them. And I gave that one example earlier with the, why would you vote for 13 euros minimum wage if the SPD was got much better chances of getting into government and kicking the CDU out, offers 12%. Like, there was just not much that voters could see what would actually, benefit them to be voting for Die Linke, when that potentially could have meant that the SPD, given that I just illustrated how marginally they won in as opposed to the CDU, would why would you in that case vote for the Linke? So these are some of the strategic mistakes. Positions the link ahead were good, just no question. There were, like, some of them were solidly left positions. But I think there's one other issue that really had an impact. And this is, again, a bit of a personality issue. There's a left, in fact, she's the very high-profile leader of the parliamentary faction of Die Linke. Her name is Sarah Wagenknecht. Now, she has a very high media profile, is often being drawn on to be speaking on behalf of the party, etc. And she had a move away from the Linke position publicly and tended towards much more populist positions. Most recently, that was pitching workers against so-called middle-class diversity issues of racism, oppression, and climate change. So having this debate out publicly also meant that, of course, Die Linke wasn't really perceived as a unified party, but appeared to be very divided and not consolidated on key issues. So I think that also played a role in the lift in Die Linke not getting more votes. But one thing I do want to mention as well is that wherever Die Linke has been active in the movement on the ground, there has been a huge membership increase. So this is, of course, totally at odds. So on the one hand, election-wise, Die Linke has lost votes. But on the other hand, those districts and branches of Die Linke, east or west, where there was active membership and active involvement in campaign, Die Linke membership has increased dramatically. So this is something to note, and obviously there will be a discussion in Die Linke on how to deal with bad election results, and that will play a role. And lastly, to finish on, Die Linke has also been in participating in government, in state government, mainly in the east, and has lost enormously, and that is because of poor decisions and poor positions and decisions being made in those governments. I won't go into that, but it, just to give readers, listeners, an idea, we're talking about sale of social housing. We're talking about cutting of hospital staff, even during corona crisis. So what that has meant, of course, is that the left has given space for anti-capitalist rhetoric and anti-establishment rhetoric from the far right, and that's why we've seen this huge increase of the AfD in this state I was just mentioning earlier, Thuringia, that was Die Linke-led and has now the far right as the largest party.
And I guess maybe we can make this kind of the last kind of question, but it seems too interesting not to sort of ask you a question about, because one of the things that has been reported in the kind of left press about the German elections, although you've told me that this isn't necessarily linked to the elections, but there was essentially a non-binding referendum within Berlin about expropriating real estate giants. And I guess, what can you tell us about this referendum, which essentially, from my understanding, has won a victory with 50%-ish kind of support? And I guess, what is its kind of implications?
Yeah, look, referendums in Germany are possible, and in there's different states have slightly different positions on this and requirements. And in Berlin, there's quite a history of referendums and also successful referendums. If a referendum, you have to go through a number of steps to be able to hold a referendum. But if you do and you get the majority, it means that the state then has to act on it. Now, sometimes referendums are called and a fleshed out piece of legislation is part of the referendum. If that is the case, that was, for instance, the case of the old airstrip in Berlin that was maintained as a community area, then the governing body of Berlin has to enact it because the piece of legislation is there and it was voted on. Now, in this particular referendum, expropriation of real estate giants, there was no piece of legislation attached. And so what the governing body now has to do is to act on the referendum, yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will follow through. So unfortunately, this particular referendum, the way it was maybe worded, I'm not sure if that's the best way of putting it, may not actually result in the expropriation. But I want to just quickly give a bit of a backdrop to this. In Berlin, Berlin was always a cheap place to live until housing speculation started, and that started around 20 years ago. It has now gone to such an extent that people are just being forced out of the housing where they've lived for 30, 40 years. Housing poverty is a huge issue in Berlin. Now, in Berlin, up until this election, there was a red-red-green government. So Die Linke was part of the government. Now, in this particular legislative period, Die Linke did actually do some very good things, and one of them was that they introduced a cap on rents in Berlin. That only became effective October, November last year, and what it meant that some real estate, some landlords had to reduce people's rent. Now, I was actually personally affected. My rent went down by a few hundred euros a month. So that was, of course, enormously popular. And it was implemented. It was legislated, it was implemented, it was executed, and people loved it. So what then the CDU government did, or the FDP, both of them, they went to the Constitutional High Court and challenged this piece of legislation, and they won. So people, like myself, we had to repay the rent that we had saved. So, and the campaign for expropriation was raised in this climate. So that the referendum was won is not surprising, because housing has been such a hot issue on the agenda in Berlin. However, the new Senat, which was so with the federal election, there were also elections happening in Berlin, in the state. Berlin is the city state, in the state of Berlin. So now the new governing body in Berlin will not have Die Linke, most likely. So Die Linke introduced the whole legislation on capping the rent. With Die Linke not being in government in Berlin, I have, unfortunately, not a lot of hope that this referendum will be enacted on.
All right. Well, thanks for that kind of Sibylla. And I guess probably now time to kind of conclude, I guess, this interview, which has been a very useful kind of discussion and very kind of illuminating. And I guess, do you have any, I guess, final kind of comments you'd kind of like to make to kind of conclude this discussion?
Look, it's so soon after the elections, there's still a lot of questions and a lot of, opportunities to see what will actually happening. So there's no decision at this stage what the government will look like. So on the one hand, I think the win for the Greens is brilliant. But at the same time, on social media, there was already, like immediately after the elections, this picture circulating with the Greens and the FDP. The FDP is like the equivalent in the Australian context of the Democrats. So neoliberal, small business oriented, that kind of stuff. And they were already, this photo circulating with those two parties, Greens and FDP, basically talking intensively with a vision of governing, going into a coalition government. And the question is whether that will be with the SPD or whether it will be with the CDU. My guess is that it will be with the SPD. But nonetheless, I fear that that means that the Greens will compromise on a lot of their more progressive positions. But it remains to be seen. And, yeah, I think watch this space.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Sibylla. It's been definitely, as I said before, a very good discussion. Thank you very much for being on our program.